The Off the Ball Podcast Network. OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Right, let's turn our attention to rugby. I'm delighted to say Ronan O'Gara is with us this morning. Ronan, how are you getting on?
Hi, Jar. Hi, Owen. How are you?
The table looks like pretty good reading for you at the moment. Third, obviously it's very bunched, but you're third on points difference ahead of Racing. What's the Six Nations like for a head coach in France?
Yeah, it's a nice break now for 2 weeks. Then we go Stade Francais, Toulon, Racing, 3 weekends in a row. So, yeah, we had 13 weekends on the trot between European Cup and the French Top 14. So, no, the boys did a great job getting through it. So it was, we had a bizarre game against Montpellier. Okay, it's 11-3 down, I think, at one stage, and then managed to get 32-11 up.
Right.
And then put the feet up and said, that's it. And we nearly got caught in the end. So we got a bit of everything in French rugby at the weekend. But yeah, it's going great now. It's going great. It's getting seeing progress and being part of progress. So it's why you take on these projects.
Are the breaks good for you, like an opportunity to reinstall different aspects of a game plan with the players who are there, or is it a bit of a pain in the hole because several players are away?
No, because we're in a strange situation. We'd only kind of two French players in the whole of the French squad and the wider French squad, so that's obviously an internal goal to change that, because players need to be playing for France. That's why they play rugby, to be challenged at the highest possible level. But there's always been a culture where so many of the players over there are just interested in playing top 14 rugby, and we need to change that they want to be playing and excelling for France, and they want to be playing and excelling in the Champions Cup. But you're fighting against history in certain regards, especially in the Champions Cup scenario. I think the club has played 12 games. At this stage, it's a secondary importance, but it should never be in secondary importance. Champions Cup is too good a competition to treat as a secondary competition, but that's something that needs to change. I think it will change when I'm there. And I think also, too, they should be really excited going to French camp. But the situation up to now was that it was a drag going to Marcosi for some players, not the La Rochelle players, but I can remember being talking to previous players that they found it difficult, and I suppose the mindset and the environment about playing for France wasn't where it should have been. That, as you can see, I think festered into their performances.
Was that because of the coach? Is it because of the international setup and playing test rugby in general, or what was that down to?
Yeah, I'd say it was definitely the environment and the fact that they were on a downward cycle for many number of years on, and the press got on their backs, and they were going in there, and a lot of the players felt like, well, why am I doing this if I'm going in and I'm put under the pump in terms of playing performance-wise, but also in terms of getting the drilling from the media. So, but I think that could change, and it did change for the World Cup. You know, I think they have different confidence levels to a lot of other nations, and the fact that, yeah, they can lose it quickly, but they can also gain it, I think, a lot quicker than other nations. And probably in terms of the Wales game, we all saw what happened there. A moment of ill-discipline cost them greatly, but they nearly got past Wales as well. So, yeah, I think previous campaigns, the reality was that the national team was probably secondary to a lot of the top 14 teams, the top 14 teams. And now what has happened, obviously, there's a lot of formal negotiations and organisations and arrangements made with the LNR and the FFR. And now the French players, that even 40 of the top French players, I suppose the management of them has dramatically changed. And they got a lot of rest periods as well, so they have a great chance of performing in a blue jersey. And I think you'll see that probably starting Sunday against England, but I don't know, will that be good enough to beat England, who were obviously excellent at a World Cup? But they really, really are getting their act together, and there's a big, I think, different feel to the French team in terms of a lot of players are hugely excited about going to camp, which is a great thing for French rugby.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how the next 4 years go as well with the World Cup in France. Probably a good time to be getting involved in French rugby. Can we talk a little bit about the Ireland team?
Just with that, Ger, it's probably an interesting thing too in terms of the cycle and the World Cup. I think you see that Ireland probably won't concentrate in the next World Cup till 24 months' time, but with France... an example of it would be Médard, the exceptional French, Toulouse 15, who's been one of their best players for the last decade. But in terms of planning for the next World Cup, he doesn't feature in the Six Nations for France. And you can look at their options at 15. They don't really have a standout 15, but they're trying to make a 15. So there's a little bit of difference in approaches already as we speak, because Uge Merdar, and especially Merdar, Uge has been, I suppose, really consistent and a really good player, but Merdar is a star, but there's no role for him in this Six Nations, which I find surprising. I thought, what he's given French rugby, maybe he could have got a season as a send-off and an opportunity to protect, or perhaps for the new French management to probably mentor a young French 15 or Rathes through a campaign. But I think obviously maybe Rathes now might get the nod to play 15 for France, which is very exciting for him.
Yeah, it's very interesting as well. Like, do you try and use the old guys to win and breed a winning culture, or do you give the new guys the opportunity to have the experience themselves and risk the result? It seems like it would be a much bigger risk. And there's a little bit of that going on with the rumoured Ireland team. It looks like, according to the rumours that the Irish rugby journalists have, that Conor Murray is going to get the nod. It also looks like Caelan Doris is going to get the nod. And it looks like Rob Herring probably starts at hooker. Now, that's probably because Ronan Kelleher is injured a bit. But, we were all looking for big signs that we would be able to roll out a narrative, picking a new number eight. That's very exciting. Sticking with Conor Murray, that's a big sign that he has a lot of faith in Conor Murray as well, if that is true.
Yeah, I think so. And also to remind people that I suppose Andy Farr was involved in the selection. He was probably the second most powerful voice in the selection for the World Cup, and they didn't bring Cooney to the World Cup. So that's placing him outside the top three, and that's only a few months ago. So I suppose there's probably a good indicator there that I think Andy Farrell needs convincing that... Cooney warrants his place in the squad first, and then I'd say he'll have a great look at him in training, and I think there would be good opportunities to have a look at that when they get the kind of 10-on-10 games with skill level, with I suppose his vision in games and his control around the rock. He is excelling for Ulster. I thought he was exceptional rounds 1-4, with a little bit off the ball, 5 and 6 for me. Prior to that, he was exceptional in the Pro 14. But he does a different role for Ulster, I think. You're not asking him to do something he's going to be doing for Ireland, he's doing for Ulster. For Ulster, he does everything. For Ireland, you're selecting him as a number 9. But so much of his game, I think, is tempo and goal kicking. But he won't really... That won't be his job description in Ireland. I think people need to probably understand that. He won't be kicking goals unless... unless they start Billy Burns,
yeah.
Then he kicks goals, but he won't kick goals ahead of Sexton or
Ross Byrne.
Ross Burns, excuse me, yeah. Harry Byrne.
Could you explain the tempo thing to us, Ronan? Because you mentioned it's tempo and goal kicking that's different from Ulster to Ireland. What do you mean by the tempo that'll be different in his scrum half role?
Well, yeah, sorry, to explain that. So for tempo, I think it's, I think great halfbacks have that, I think, inner knowledge about when they kind of put the foot in the accelerator and when they decelerate it, depending on what's happening in front of them. So obviously you look at, for an example, this would be team tempo, and it's not necessarily number 9 tempo. It would be the try that England scored against Ireland and the Aviva in the first 2 minutes in the Six Nations game last year, where So previewed kickoff to kick long, or knowing that Ireland box kick. So England kicked long through Farrell, long into Ireland's 22. Ireland catch the ball, play a phase, play a number of phases through their forwards to get their chase line right. And Connor sometimes kicks the contest, or he kicks it out, okay? So they kick out the ball. Just as the ball's being kicked, you see all England forwards are in kind of tempo mode, or in accelerating the kind of the time it takes to take a line out. So the hooker was already at the taking the ball off a ball boy. The ball boy didn't get dried. It was over the top of the ball to Tuilagi on a pre-planned three-play move. And basically, they knew exactly what they were doing. That's at the start of a game, but I think what he does well, really well for Ulster, I think he puts great tempo in their game. I think he knows when to take the quick freeze, when to challenge around the ruck, when to play with. He is a very good coach in Dwayne Peel in Ulster too. I think it's always interesting to see when assistant coach, backs coach and attack coach goes work with a person that's in their position. So obviously Dwayne Peel is an ex Welsh grade and Lions grade at number nine, so you can see Cooney benefiting immensely from that, and that speaks volumes, I think, for him as well, the fact that his game has gone to a different level in the last 6 months. And he was playing well before that, but I think most definitely in this 3 month period he has pushed it to a completely different level. So to answer your question about the tempo, it would be, you dictate the pace at which your team plays at. I think he's very comfortable doing that at club level. It'll take him a few games to get it right at test level, but I think that is, he has that capacity to do that. And that means, I think, you mean, so understanding, can your forwards in front of you keep their, are they capable of maintaining this pace, or do they need to kill it off a little bit, or do we need to play field position a little bit? Are we going to keep ball in hand all the time now, or do we need the ball in front of the forwards a little bit, or are we going to kind of play, you know what I mean, 10 channel to kind of 13 channel to width? Are you going to go straight to width? Obviously that would be determined from the leaders and the tactics, but the key man around that is the 9. The 10 isn't, because the 10 gets the ball from 9, so the more the 9 has the tempo right, the better the 10 looks.
Can I ask you a bit about, you mentioned Dwayne Peel there, about Mike Catt and what kind of role and how quickly we'll begin to see an influence of somebody in the role that Mike Catt has. I don't know if you've ever met or if you've come across Mike Catt, if you've studied how his teams play.
Yeah, I did. I roomed with Mike Catt on the Lions tour in 2001 to Australia. So, yeah, he's a good guy, really good guy, yeah, interesting guy, and has strong beliefs on what how he thinks the game is played, which is essential with a coach. And I think and really nice manner about him, and it'll be interesting to see, because there are different ways of playing the game, and most definitely from an attack point of view, it might seem straightforward to a lot of people, but not necessarily. I think where you position players, especially forward, they need a direction, and you got to remember in a moving part, Jerry, you have 8 bodies that are moving, and if they're positioned slightly differently, or could be completely differently, but if they're positioned in certain scenarios differently, that multiplied by 8 on one phase is a lot of work, and there's a lot of I suppose interesting moving parts in that. So yeah, there's huge flexibility in how the game could be played under them, and I think obviously under Joe it was a lot of power plays in terms of specials off lineouts, but the phase game was was completely determined by the ruck, but you can see that there's a different way of playing the game in terms of keeping the ball alive, and we saw that with offloads in the World Cup.
Yeah, that was definitely the cornerstone of Joe Smith's coaching, and in his book there was a part about a coaching course that he did when he was at Claremont that explained the value and the importance of the ruck, the 30-40-30-30 dynamic that he talked about and that Paul O'Connell talked about in his book as well, and just how important the ruck was. And that was a great building block to establish. In a way, the attacking style of Ireland came under a lot of criticism in the last 18 months, where we looked like we were a little bit blunt compared to some of the other teams and how they would actually look to move the point of attack. We were definitely would fall back on a bring the ball up and try and batter teams. And for a long time, it obviously worked.
Yeah.
My cat seems to have a very different philosophy from that.
Okay, and I'm not up to speed with which his philosophy is in the current game, because obviously with Italy, we didn't see that much of it in terms of obviously getting the results that he required. So, yeah, it will be very, very interesting for me to see exactly how they're playing and the different shifts in it. Because, yeah, I think the great thing about Ireland under Schmidt was they were so good at the ruck, because he coached and he knew exactly what he was doing. And I think that's what happens with some people if you try and copy it. The same with Paul O'Connell. He's a massive fan, obviously, of the way the ruck is coached under Joe Schmidt, because he gets it and he understands. But only if you get the detail right, Jar and Owen, and I think that's important to say, because I would say it's probably an easy one to kind of pinpoint as, yeah, in the last 18 months the game suffered because, but I think the game suffered in every compartment, potentially mindset also, just as much as maybe the technical parts. But I think it hit a stage where running over people wasn't working, and the levels involved up to that point to get that to work, there was huge, I suppose, effort going into it, epitomised by probably CJ Stander. But it came to a stage when you played England, you played New Zealand, they knew that was coming, and they had our measure in that game, so we needed to adapt. But it's a big shift in mindset and going away, because if you want to run offload lines, you can't be as efficient as you are around the ruck. That's the reality of it, because or why the ruck works is because you have a ball carrier and the two nearest support know exactly what they're doing, and they kill the threats around the ruck. So, but if you have a philosophy, you're keeping the ball alive, it means I have the ball in my hand, so I'm the most powerful person. But either the two people next to me are expecting it. You could see with Ireland that they weren't expecting that, they were getting their ruck right, and they were a team that were so so excellent at maintaining possession, but maintaining possession sometimes became a blunt threat.
What do you want your teams to do? Do you have a, I want my team to do this, or do you wait and see who's available on a week-by-week basis and go, well, this week we're going to do this, and this week we have the team to do this?
No, I don't have the expertise around the ruck, to be honest with you, around coaching it, but I think that's the beauty of being a coach and formulating a good team. You get someone who's an expert in that area. And I think I would be open-minded on that, Ger. I would think what I'm not a fan is of robotic rugby in terms of what I'm coaching in La Rochelle is a framework with three different scenarios available. But sometimes, and I'm only learning as well, I think the fact is that sometimes three is too many options. Maybe I think two is the way to go. Or we might go with A, and potentially if A isn't working, we go with option B. But I think I'm a massive fan of having the framework, but you got to trust your instinct. That for me is the key. And I think you could train that during the week if you give the guys enough potential scenarios of this is where you may face. But the game is so fascinating at the minute, because there is so much independence and in the attack side where you let teams play, as I said to Owen, with tempo, with flow as opposed to flair, with flow I meant to use there, okay? So there's so many scenarios that while the defence side of the game, it can still be very much black and white. But with the ball, you have so many options. I think without the ball, your job description is pretty basic. You've got to kind of stop them as quickly as possible, and without conceding as much ground as possible.
We started by talking about the potential team that has been named, and it looks like it's going to be Ringrose and Henshaw. It's difficult to make too much of an argument at the moment with any of the centre partnerships. It looks like Ringrose is nailed on at 13. It looks like whoever's going to partner him is the one that's up for grabs. And Bundiaki, Robbie Henshaw are kind of slightly ahead of Chris Farrell at the moment. But any of those three should be able to do a really good job for Ireland at the moment. Is that right?
Yeah, I was thinking about it. Obviously, where we are at the minute, I think it's an incredibly exciting time for Irish rugby in the fact that the back line, I think there's great choice there. And you'll say to me, well, was that choice there for the World Cup? Well, we didn't see Addison, and Addison, for me, seems to be playing incredibly well for Ulster. I think there are certain players that stand out for having time on the ball, and he seems to be the Irish player that stands out for having time on the ball. He makes a lot of hard things look easy, which is a great trait to have. He looks very, very interesting. And obviously then, Larmer has taken his game to another level again, I think. And Fairnston, he's benefited hugely from working with, probably Contepomi, and obviously working with Stuart Lancaster as well. It seems to be that his game has accelerated. So that's probably two guys that are very much in the mix to start the game. I think you've Earls and Stockdale as well. You've three centres, as you said, and then you've Johnny, then you've Connor, then you've Cooney. I would say backline one against backline two. That would have been an interesting training session because I don't think there's much between them. And I think if you have that competition Monday to Friday, it means that the team that takes the pitch on Saturday has a great chance of displaying their work. But also what's interesting too is that the game has changed, and I think even more so in the last few months, and the fact that getting fixated on 1-15 is probably the wrong thing to do. It's a 23-man game. You say, well, it always was, but more so now. I think coaches are picking teams about how they want to finish and finish strong as well. Obviously, you'll say, well, you should have your strongest team starting, but not necessarily. And I'd use the example of, you know, I mean, I think sometimes when Sean Cronin finishes, the team is stronger because he's such an exceptional impact player. So there are different ways, I suppose, of putting your team together. And from a backline point of view, if you've Cooney involved in your 23, do you carry a 10 sub in the fact that, is he a goal-kicking kind of number 10 option? Then you can have two outfield backs, which completely changes your dynamic in a squad. So if that's the case, you could have Bundiaki and if one of Larmer or Addison Conway didn't start, yeah, you could have, yeah, exactly. You could have a Cooney, an Aki, a Conway, or Cooney, an Aki, and Addison on the bench, which, you know, after 50 minutes of giving one picture to Scotland of an attacking threat, you've put Bundiaki and Addison or Bundiaki and Conway into the mix, and your analysis, you know, I think a lot of players take security in their preparation from defending pictures during the week, but they wouldn't have seen any of those pictures of those three coming into a four-man attack. So it opens all kinds of possibilities, but it's risky, and it's always a dilemma for a coach, kind of saying, how can I maximise my bench? But it becomes, I think, a little bit more risk-friendly when you have someone like Cooney in your squad.
Yeah, no doubt. Ronan, great stuff this morning. Thanks a million for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Great chat. Thank you.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio. That was an Off the Ball Podcast Network presentation.